All right, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. So I was going to make a video, and I changed the subject of the video, I guess you could say, because there's this podcast, and a couple of people have mentioned this link to a David Benatar interview, and that somehow it needs a response, and I don't disagree that it's a pretty bad interview, and I probably should respond. But anyway, so I was going to talk about, other people gripe that somehow these videos aren't diverse enough in their subject matter. And so, yeah, I guess I'll make a separate video where I do the opining on all the irrelevant crapola that preoccupies people in terms of issues. And the fact that you can't fix any of it with a democracy, because the democracy has been ruined by the two-party system, which is just a coalition of assholes on one side, a coalition of the opposite kind of asshole on the other side. And the extremes have all the power, and the extremes are toxic on both sides. It's not a dime's worth of difference thing, but it's close enough to being, who cares? Nuclear bomb, hydrogen bomb, why get into, plague versus anthrax? I guess I'd rather have one than the other, but it's too shitty to even contemplate, frankly. making the choice between the two slow, miserable ways to do everything the wrong way. So anyway, that's why I don't talk about it. It's because what's there to talk about? There's no good guy in the war. So why would I talk about the war? Like, it matters. There's no good guys. There's just going to be the collateral damage. That's it. It doesn't matter, Joe. There's two evils fighting each other, and they're just going to kill everybody else with them. All right, anyway. So, that's why I don't talk about it. Anyway, all right, so let's do this pretty horrible interview, I have to concede. Benatar wrote a really nice book, in the sense that, it added some depth and complexity to a subject where, maybe it needed some of that. The whole asymmetry idea, the whole way of analyzing this concept of good and bad. I'd almost say it's like Sam Harris's introduction of talking about the moral landscape and saying, look, to all these nihilists and morons who think we can't figure out what the truth is, yeah, we can, okay? We can describe circumstances that are innately and intrinsically and absolutely bad, okay? And we, it's not subjective. It's a reasoned, rational observation regarding the circumstance. All right, anyway. So this carnism debunked, I don't know what that means. Anyway, so he's asking a question about, there's anti-natalists who think human beings should overpopulate on purpose or create new population so they can soil the planet more. And soiling the planet, breaks the ecosystem in some ways. In other ways, it doesn't. So global warming is a big argument against that. But anyway, their theory is that somehow we will create less life on Earth, and therefore do the biosphere a favor, when more people isn't the road to having any hope of winding down the whole system. So it's clearly just you're basically just saying let the animals have it in the end. Because you're basically just, completing the recipe for some kind of catastrophe that puts us back in some kind of, stuck in a forever tribal war or something, some dystopia where all civilization breaks down and it's just a bunch of clans fighting with each other or something. Even that, and even if that happened, obviously one of the clans would eventually take over, they'd reestablish all the technology, and you'd just be back where you started. So it wouldn't be doing anybody any favors. All right, it's like Chernobyl. It'll grow back. You're not going to solve the problem. We don't have enough asphalt to solve the problem that way. We have to do it on purpose. We can't screw the environment accidentally. You know, we're not going to annihilate life accidentally. You have to do it on purpose. All right, so anyway, Benatar's answer to the question that there are these wackos, I think he just says, yes, there are these wackos. So we'll listen to him say that.
I'm aware of the objection. It hasn't been put to me personally, but I have heard about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's all he had to say to it. I heard of it. Yeah, it doesn't sound very sensible, but okay. All right, so I'll go find the next Benatar statement. The guy interviewing is just, he talks too much, and he doesn't say anything. So we'll just do the Benatar parts, and I'll paraphrase the question. All right, back. So I decided to download the video. Too many commercials. And you really don't need the image because there is nothing in the image. It's just a static image that isn't that interesting, so the hell with it. So we'll just play the audio clips that are relevant. So Bentar's asked, could antinatalism cause harm to animals? Which is just pretty stupid.
Well, let me answer that question in part. So first of all, if we just take your question at face value, can antinatalism increase suffering? Well, obviously it can in some ways. If, for example, somebody wanted to have a child and they didn't have a child and they suffered more as a result of not having a child, then they would suffer more than they would if they had children.
All right, so this whole thing about net versus incidental. So again, if somebody asks me, if we brutally kill 1,000 people, but we end up with a cure for malaria, is it okay? Well, they could ask me if we brutally kill 1,000,000 people, I'll probably say it's still okay. Because in the end, the fact is you're going to have less people suffering than more, and that's all that matters. So even when you add up the 1,000,000 people tortured, let's say, all right, you're still better off in the end, okay? Over the run of the silly game, you'll be better off. So it does, apparently Benatar isn't too impressed by the net argument, the what's the outcome. He's not a consequentialist, as it's called, when, of course, that's all that should make any difference. Of course, it's what's the end result? Is the end result, when you add up all the prices paid, does it cost less? That's all you want to know. If you made it cost less, it has to be a good idea. There's no other way to look at it. Less suffering, well, that's the plan you go with, the one that has the least suffering in it. So to me, it's sort of a no-brainer.
It doesn't follow from that there's a net increase in suffering. So we need to differentiate between increasing somebody's suffering and increasing suffering overall. Mm-hmm. But I think what lies behind your question is not that kind of narrow focus, but rather the question about whether antinatalism impacts on animal suffering in general. And I think, again, there would not be a negative effect from antinatalism, I think.
Right. So he's arguing that making the argument, a positive argument, that in the end you're going to win. So that's what you have to go with, is the strategy that where you pay the least over the longest period of time. So that's the only way to look at it.
Net effect would be positive. But I also don't think that we should only be concerned about effects.
So again, what does that even mean? It's not about effects. I mean, then what do you should be concerned with? The effects are about all there is. There's nothing else but effects. You shouldn't be concerned with outcomes. Yeah, you should. I don't even understand how you do anything called logic without paying attention to the effect. The effects are all that matter.
This is where it's going to make a difference, whether you're a consequentialist or not.
Again, how could you be something other than a consequentialist and call yourself rational? Okay, so that was it. All right, so we'll find the next little bit. All right, so now he's trying to pigeonhole him into being a deontologist or a consequentialist or some other silly, you know, bullshit. Who cares? A jargonist? Are you a jargonist?
I've attempted to frame the arguments that I've advanced in a theory-neutral way, because...
Okay, so whatever that means, right? So he's just making them as arguments. They stand by themselves as individual little arguments. They're not from some point of view besides just making a reasoned argument that, hey, when you really look at good and bad things, okay, a lot of the goods are just fixing bads. I mean, that's just a simple argument that could be made. It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be from some deontology, or some other kind of bullshit word. I hate philosophy. They just ruined it. People have ruined everything. In my lifetime, it all happened. It all got ruined in my lifetime, because I have to admit that even though people were assholes 50 years ago, they weren't. You know, their asses weren't just flapping in the wind like this. Was it nearly as bad?
If I advance it from a particular theory, then people who reject that theory would just say, well, those arguments don't apply to us. Mm-hmm. And I, in fact, think that engaging this argument can, in a practical way, also bypass theoretical disagreements. So consequentialist arguments for natalist veganism are probably stronger or less weak, whichever way you want to put it, than non-consequentialist arguments. But I think that even those are going to fail because of how difficult it is to calculate consequences.
All right. So, I mean, this is not the hard part, because if you're saying that the calculated consequence is a deliberate effort to reduce human population, and then there'll be a solution, you know, the final solution, you know, of injecting the final bugicide and being done with it, ending its suffering, putting it out of its misery. And you could argue this is the same thing anybody's got to do with somebody's life. You know, there's people who have done the angel mercy thing, you know, mercy killed. And there's people who have it as, you know, there's some conversation, you know, at least among humans, about this right to die and about the right to die gracefully. And there's always going to be this decision to be made, and it's unpleasant, and it's, you know, there's nothing great about it. And you have to make the decision that, okay, this is the last seizure, the last event of, and it's time to let it go. I mean, people make this decision for their pets all the time, and people anguish over it. And a lot of times, unfortunately, the pet suffers unnecessarily because of the, you know, the reluctance of people to, you know, do something too soon. And that, you know, and I guess you could make the argument there's also the fear of being too late. I guess the too sooners are more abundant than the too laters, but... it's never pleasant, but it's a fact. So it's not, this isn't like some, oh, we can't predict the outcome of our strategy. No, our strategy is to bail out of the airplane, you know, before it blows up. And, you know, do it as gracefully as possible, but just to make sure it's all done, it's finished. You know, we'll pick up the guinea pig and the rabbit or whatever, and we'll jump out, and we'll take care of the sentient beings and blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm using living metaphors because it's hard to use a dying metaphor in some kind of fun way. But I just mean we're on a rescue mission. You do the right thing. It's going to be a very predictable outcome because it's exactly what you're aiming at. He should know that. Bentar should know that's what you're aiming at. I mean, he's never said it, okay? He has said right in the first pages of his book that everything he's going to talk about in the book applies to the animal kingdom. They're also better never to have been, all right? And guess what? Animals can't read the book, okay? They can't take his advice. So we have to help them, okay, to be liberated from the cruelty. And that's just the fact. And the fact that he won't take any responsibility for that being a truth, that animals are just retarded people. And if we're going to prevent ourselves from being tortured, we have to help prevent them from being tortured. It's not complicated. That part is not complicated.
Especially the very long-term kinds of consequences that advocates of the kind of argument you're describing would be thinking of.
Yeah, what would be the long-term benefit of creating more human beings to have more conflicts, to degrade the environment more, to create more human death and more human mayhem? I mean, the idea that all this is going to work out just fine is ridiculous. Obviously, there's going to be a terrible amount of human upheaval in the future because we have a bunch of unsustainable nonsense going on. So it's not going to work, okay? It's not financed. It's not anything. And we don't have any kind of system in place that's going to be able to gracefully change, you know, have humans move or migrate into the future. There's no rational politics in place.
Can you?
Okay, enough of that. I'll be back. All right, so the guy admits he's a philosophical noob and he wants Benatar to explain consequentialism. Benatar just basically said, I don't have much use for the term. I don't want to be pigeonholed by it. You know, I don't really play in that atmosphere. And now the guy's just being, you know, go ahead. He's going to just sit there and belligerently force him to talk about a kind of viewpoint he doesn't have any appreciation for.
Well, consequentialists think that we assess the moral value of an action exclusively in terms of its consequences. Mm-hmm. And so they think that the end justifies the means. Or
I'm just saying the end is part of, okay, the total what you're paying for it, right? So whatever the end is, that's your victory, that's your statement, and you pay a price for it. And so, yes, the price you're paying for it includes the price you paid for it, okay? So whatever cash you had to put on the table. But I'm just saying, you're buying a cure and you're establishing what the price of it's going to be. Now, obviously, if I cure malaria, I can afford to pay a lot for that because the cure for malaria is going to be an insane amount of suffering prevented. So if I cause a little suffering to do it, it's going to be still, the win is going to be insane. You know, it's so much, you know, you're talking about huge numbers of people. I mean, you're talking about, you know, 40 million people, something like that. I mean, it's a huge number of people whose life is substantially degraded by this disease. Infection, whatever. An amazingly stupid statement, frankly. To even think that it isn't about the consequences. Of course it's about the consequences. Where do you pay for it? What do you pay for it, and how much does it fix the problem? If it doesn't fix the problem, then you shouldn't pay anything for it.
It justifies the means. So long as you're going to produce the best possible outcome, whatever action you need to perform in producing that outcome is the morally right action to perform. And people who deny consequentialism are not denying that consequences matter. They just think that consequences are not necessarily decisive, that there may, for example, be some things that we ought not to do, even if it would produce the best consequences. Now, my sense is that in practice, consequentialist and non-consequentialist arguments, at least in their best versions, are going to converge on particular answers to almost all moral questions.
I don't even know how it even makes any sense. I mean, obviously, if somebody's not taking consequences seriously, that is, outcomes, I don't know how they can converge, you know, because every single time you have to do something unpleasant, the non-consequentialists are going to bail out and say it's too hard, it's too ugly, I don't want to do it. I mean, I could make the argument that you know, in some respects, I'm emotionally not a consequentialist because, again, if I was faced with the dilemma, you know, of deciding to give cancer to kid A or give cancer to kid B, I wouldn't want anything to do with either choice. So, yeah, if I got to push some fat guy onto the tracks to save other people, I don't even want to be bothered, okay? I want to walk the other way. I don't want to be bothered trying to figure out. But again, we're not really talking about a choice that's that ambiguous. And even if it was well explained to me that pushing the fat guy over is always going to be the right thing to do, and the seven people are worth it, and they will cure cancer, or they'll do something valuable, why would I want something to do with this? It's not my job. I don't want to be pushing people. I don't want to be injecting people. I don't want to be doing any of this stuff. I didn't make this guy live. I didn't make me live. It's not my fault, so why should I have anything to do with it? But it doesn't change the fact that I would say, yes, I should. Just look, just again, I've said this before, but I mean, if somebody figures out and proves it, it's an absolute fact that my death, okay, my horrible death, being crucified on a cross, the whole thing, would somehow make it all right, you know, to save billions of animals, torture. Well, then, yeah, I have to agree to it. But whatever, you think I'm going to do it by saying, gee, I love being a consequentialist. No, I'm going to emotionally reject the idea that, why is it my problem? Why are you picking on me? Why is it me? Maybe it's not my fault. But I can't disagree. I can't sit there and say, no, you're making an illogical statement that's not correct. No, I won't be able to do that. I'll just whine as, you know, as I carry the cross and get crucified, because I know it's the right thing, but I'm not gonna pretend I like the idea that I have to deal with it. And I don't think people like the fact that they have to deal with disposing of their pets in some humane way. They don't like having to deal with it. All right, the choice sucks. The decision sucks. And that's all part of why the whole living thing sucks, is that it has these ugly, disgusting pieces in it that are just poisonous. I think that's it for Benatar, right?
Maybe some highly rarefied examples where they're going to part ways. But in general, I think they're going to converge. And I think that they do generally converge on this question as well. So,
all right, so I just fundamentally disagree. There's a ton of people who say you can't do it because it's just like dealing with the feral cat problem. You do it one time, you cleanse the population, you eradicate the wild cat population, and it'll take decades for it to come back. The deer population, same thing. It'll take a very long time, a number of years, before you'll have any kind of real problem again. And the pussies, okay, won't let the right answer be, won't let the expedient, cheap, efficient solution happen, that is euthanize stray animals, and instead will spend a million times more money, okay, literally, cutting their nuts off and, you know, cutting their ovaries out and shoving them back on the street to die miserably, because they think that's being kind and empathetic, and killing them would be cruel, when it's exactly the opposite. Doing surgery is cruel. Letting them go to sleep and stay asleep is not cruel. Don't wake up, berries, is not cruel. Shit. It's from Blue Lagoon. Yeah, they had little berries that never wake up. You know. Be nice to live on the island of never wake up berries.
There are many versions of the argument that you're considering. Perhaps you should present to me an argument, and let's see how I would respond to it. Of course, this would be best if it were presented by somebody who believed the objection to antinatalism. I get the sense you don't believe it. But second best would be for you to present the argument, make the case, and then I'll try to respond.
So that's pretty pitiful, yes, that this is all being brought up because of some fringe commenters. And look, they get to me every now and then, too. You know, the little raggy comments, and you end up saying, well, this represents some number of people. It probably represents two. So I don't think there's that many antinatalists who are thinking the real good strategy is to make more people. I don't think so. Tiny percentage. All right, so he pretends to be one of these morons, and he makes the argument that we clear a lot of land so the animals have less places to live. He didn't say anything about disrupting the environment necessarily, which was, you know, to me the big one. We obviously make parts of the ocean sterile, which, our plastic isn't a huge place for sentient, brain-enabled organisms to live. But then he also said we should be around to care for animals, and that's a whole different subject then, isn't it? Because we don't really care for them. We torment them, essentially, and we exploit them, but we don't really care for them. If we cared for them, then we would be mitigating. We would stop lions from having to eat lambs and all that kind of crap. We would end all the carnage. All right. So, all right. So, Benatar's response.
Well, so a version of your argument could be advanced either by a natalist vegan or a natalist non-vegan. Now, one version of the argument would just say, even to the natalist vegans, well, if you're really interested in maximizing human damage to the environment and thereby contributing to the extinction of wild animal species, why don't you in fact eat meat? Because that will increase the demand for the destruction of rainforests. Mm-hmm. So you can see where this begins to lead for the vegan, the natalist vegan.
Right. So, yeah, the very idea of the vegans pointing it out, just because, yes, in the short run, I mean, we know the vegan argument is that obviously you're feeding crops you have to grow to the animals instead of to us. And if you fed it to us, there'd be a whole lot less trauma, okay, caused to animals, because you wouldn't obviously be incarcerating them and butchering them and torturing them and all of that crap. So in a sense, they're giving the vegan anti-natalist is essentially supporting the being non-vegan. They're basically making an argument that the non-vegans could use to say, well, look, see how we're fucking the world over? Isn't that, that's the game, right? Fuck up the environment. Well, we're fucking it up even better than you. You vegans suck at screwing up the environment. You know, so that's what Benatar's sort of saying there. It's just an idiotic argument in a way to have a vegan who's for animal incarceration. All right. Who's rewarding anything that changes the dynamic from being a natural system to being one controlled by humans, which frankly is worse than the natural one, I guess. I mean, it's a 50-50 argument about whether the factory farm is worse than, per square foot, it's certainly worse than anything nature can contrive. You know, if we're talking about the world economy, it's, you know, kind of becomes irrelevant. All right. So I sort of want to make the argument from thermodynamics. I sort of want to make the argument that people create a lot more heat in the environment. So that's the whole global warming thing. And we don't even just do it through fossil fuels. We also do it whether we're doing the nuclear thing or some other method of creating mechanisms, because they all end up dissipating heat that ends up being atmospheric heat. And it's the atmospheric heat that's the problem. So the heating of the atmosphere. And that's the cycle that gets broken. That's the thing that will release the methane. That's the thing that will take us back to the Jurassic temperatures. And the Jurassic temperatures supported a lot more life. So the simple argument is if you start changing the zone, okay, where it's whatever, 70 degrees Fahrenheit, and you start expanding the territory that stays at that temperature, they're going to create an insane amount of more living creatures moving about. So even if, you know, you're busy asphalting everything, you're expanding the territory that can be exploited by brain-abled organisms. And so you will create more living things net, just because thermodynamics sort of demands it. If the heat's available, the animals will absorb it and turn it into animation, being alive.
But more generally, I would say about this argument is that there are multiple ways that you could bring about the extinction of wild animals if you wanted to. And it's not obvious that having babies is the best way to do that. You could just increase your production. So you could be an antinatalist and also, let's say, consume meat, or just gratuitously contribute towards the destruction of wild animal habitat. So so that you can bring about the reduction of wild animal species. But of course, there are further consequentialist worries here because, yes, you might reduce certain species, but that might just open up the way for other animal species to proliferate because some animals have
Right. So this is the problem with these kind of, you know, they're kind of just statements, and then I have to say too many words. Benatar is having to say too many words, but you have to qualify what you're saying based on some sort of real likely circumstance, not just any old circumstance. And so, yeah, there's just way too many little details that are so vitally important to whether this works or doesn't work. So it would be an important detail that if your overpopulation leads to nuclear war, well, you could almost argue that's going to make the environment even hotter, and it's going to create even more energy for the biosphere to convert into sentient life forms. And they're going to be living on a radioactive planet, and it's going to be even, the attrition rates will be even higher, and the mutation rates, and the disease rates, and the disability rates, and the ugly rate. It'll be ugly as fuck. So there's conditions that you have to add to this scenario and point out, well, if it's going to include this event, that's a non-starter. That event means it'll cost way too much in the long run.
Declined in numbers. And so it might well be that other kinds of animal suffering just increases. So I think the general point is that there are so many imponderables when it comes to the consequences of one's actions, that to start suggesting...
Right, so why have a conversation about doing it accidentally and just have a conversation about you're either for getting to this end on purpose or you're against getting to the end on purpose? So we either are saying this is a dog that needs to be put to sleep or it's not. That's it. You know, it's not that complicated. Is the organism too fettered by these imperfections imposed by evolution, these bad syndromes of trivial passion, you know, negligence, bigotry, you know, all the crap, okay, that's in our nature, and that none of that is really overcomable, and you're never going to get to some point where you're singing and dancing and happy, because singing and dancing will be trivial. It won't be able to make you happy. Your brain will demand something better than a simple song and dance as a justification for torture. It'll say, no, that's just not good enough. And nothing's going to be good enough. There's no human activity good enough to justify torturing anything. We can't sing and dance well enough to justify squishing a rabbit. Just a fact. That's the fact that needs to be argued, whether there is something humans could do to possibly justify torturing a sentient organism, even just one, let alone trillions.
Seeing that we should do things that are from the face of it are deeply immoral, because somehow we've got an account of how that might produce the best consequences, when in fact we're not beginning to fathom all of the causal...
All right, well, it can't really be immoral if it's ethically appropriate. So again, you're just saying that it's immoral to what? Break the law and kill a rapist or something. I mean, there's some idea that you can break some law to do the right thing. That creating the right end is somehow, there's some way you can create the right end and do it in some way that's too expensive. Well, of course you could. But if you're not doing it in a way that's too expensive, if you haven't violated anything but a law, nobody got hurt, then it's pretty imbecilic to say your solution costs too much. So if you can secretly and privately destroy a person with a terrible blood footprint, it's hard to say you committed a moral crime.
Factors and features that might operate here is, I think, not only naive, but dangerously naive.
So...
I don't know what he meant by dangerously naive, but whatever. again, this, the conversation really just should be about a philosophical perspective. Either you're for graceful exit or you're not. Simple enough. I think. Simple enough. All right. No offense to the whatever podcast guy, but just ask the question. I don't even understand it. So is there something Benatar would do to create more asphalt? I don't know. He didn't. I don't know. We'll see what Benatar says, but I couldn't understand it.
Well, I wouldn't do it, I think, for more than one reason. But the worry is, why would you engage in an activity that on the face of it is deeply harmful? On the grounds that this is going to lead to less bad overall, when you actually have very little grounds for thinking that it will lead to less harm overall, given the complexity of all the causal operations that are at work in the world.
Right. So he's saying, look, why would I do anything pro carnivore or pro, you know, reckless? Why would I think there's any pro to making more humans? Because this isn't going to be a solution that you need a big brain. You know, it's not like you're going to hatch some new human that'll even, like, so say, be capable of curing malaria. This isn't going to be that kind of circumstance. You're not looking for somebody to do that. You're looking for a way to control your democracies and your the way in which human civilizations evolve. And you're trying to say that you're going to have a civilization where people are going to tend to vote kindness and compassion and empathy instead of exploitation, greed, and selfishness. I mean, that's really all it's about. It's about the difference between those two votes. Are you a greedy, selfish, silly cunt, or smelly, shitty, skanky cunt, or are you an empathetic, do first, do no harmist, who's not looking for trouble, not looking for a big payday, and would like to reduce the amount of suffering endured, period. An anti-torturist. Simple enough. Let's see if he said anything else.
So,
no, that's the other guy. So he really is just going to badger him with these kind of questions. So he brought up rainforest and taking away rainforest and destroying rainforest. And isn't that a great idea? Because there's less animals per square foot or something. And I don't know if that's even true again. Because the rainforest is being replaced with pig farms and chickens and cows and organisms that are going to be stacked on top of each other. And they're obviously also more sentient. The animals we're replacing the rainforest with, we're replacing a bunch of reptiles and insects with a bunch of mammals, which, I'd be the last person that wants people to think insects don't feel, but clearly the conscious mechanism is clearly, I think, made richer by more neurons. So more neurons are dangerous. The more neurons you have, the more that can be devoted to this function of awareness of your pain and suffering. So the higher order of animal is, it's a fair argument to make that you don't want to replace bugs with people. Now, it might not make any difference. Maybe bugs do have a very rich conscious experience because, they don't need to know how to add and subtract. They don't need to do, they don't have to know how to obey traffic signals. They don't have to learn a whole bunch of stuff. So they don't need a bunch of neurons to feel. Feeling doesn't require hundreds of billions of neurons. Maybe it only requires a few million. So that's the catch to the argument. But again, these are just such little niche arguments for which you can make all kinds of different arguments about the thermodynamics and the fact that you're not going to be able to change that, but you have to feed those animals. The rainforest you're cutting down, you're feeding the biosphere because you're going to bring in food from other places, All right, so you're going to have to grow more stuff to feed these animals. It's not going to be, you're not replacing a rainforest with cement. You're replacing it with a biosphere, I would argue.
It's going to cause a vast amount of suffering. So if you think about the destruction of rainforests, that not only removes habitat for some animals. And so even if you think that there'll be fewer of those animals and they won't suffer, so, but then think about whatever animals fill the niche that is left by that. But quite independently of that, it contributes towards global warming. And global warming doesn't just increase the number of beings that dies, it also increases the amount of suffering that there is in the world, both for humans and for non-human animals. And again, global warming is unlikely to eliminate all sentience from the world, unless it reaches truly astronomical proportions. But what it might well do is kill off certain kinds of beings, and then others might fill the niche. So again,
yeah, like rats. Obviously, yeah. So you might kill some of the diversity. You might kill off some of the weaker forms, the more niche, environmentally sensitive organisms, the ones who can't take a couple of degrees change in their temperature and a couple of this and a couple of that. And you wipe out millions of those. But other organisms will just fill the void.
Again, the general point is, why would...
Look, I mean, praying mantises can live just eating other praying mantises. You know, the fact is there's lots of animals that are perfectly happy to be cannibals. So even if they just ate their own young, you know, let them grow a little bit and then ate them, they could have a completely sustainable, you know, highly rich biosphere just made out of them. And they just raise their own kids like pigs and then slaughter them.
You, even if you're a consequentialist, engage in actions that are immediately and obviously harmful on the justification that you're going to be producing less harm in the long run. When in fact, given how distant those consequences are and given the complex causal relations between what you do and the purported outcome, you actually can't be sure at all that it's going to produce less suffering in the long run.
Right. I mean, look, there's a simple argument. You could say, look, a nuclear war, that would be really great. We kill a bunch of people and a bunch of animals and blah, blah, blah. But again, the problem is it all grows back. And so, and then there's nobody, there's no civilization to moderate it or control any of it. And therefore, you haven't won anything. You didn't gain any ground at all. You just killed a generation and just let the whole thing grow back again.
What do you think of species extinction? Is it a good thing or is it...
Oh, I didn't mean to play that, did I? Well, we'll let him finish.
Is it a bad thing for you?
Depends on how it's brought about. So I think that if species can die off in bad ways, so if there's lots of suffering on the way, the process of the species becoming extinct can be very bad because of all the suffering that's involved. But if you're asking me about the end state, that there are no more beings of that kind, well, I don't think that's bad for the species. It might be bad for other beings. So if, yeah. If we don't have particular animals to behold and be marveled by and or to marvel at, then that's a loss for us. There may be other animals that benefit. Sometimes there's symbiotic relations between animals, and if so, one species dies off, and then another species is unable to engage in those symbiotic relations, then that...
So this is sort of exactly what I was talking about before, that the fact is the whole biosphere could be turned into five organisms or something. It's just a truth, okay? And they would just eat each other, and it would be this little tiny circle of life instead of this circle of life with millions and billions of organisms eating different things for dinner. You don't need to have different things to eat for dinner. You don't need any of that crap because it finds a way, so to speak. Okay, the mutants will mutate. They will, the evolutionary process will require the adaptation to the new environment, and it will happen. And there will be no way to sanitize the environment through attrition of species. You're not going to do it that way. It's not going to work. The rats will learn to eat the rats. I mean, it'll happen.
existing species will be worse off. So there can be those aspects of species extinction which are worrying. But the mere state of a species being extinct, whether it be human or some other animal, that I don't think is bad.
Okay. Pause. Oh, Benatar continues.
So the whole argument is whether you can separate out the mere state of extinction from how it's brought about.
All right. So again, this idea of how you bring it about, it always matters, right? So again, I could suggest, look, okay, let's call the deer population. All right, let's do it by taking hammers and, beating the deers to death. Or let's do it by, making devices that lop their head off in a millisecond and they never even knew what happened. Or let's do a really high-tech way where we hypnotize them. All right, they fall asleep, and while they're asleep, we give them an injection and they never wake up. It matters how you kill something. It matters how you cause an outcome. But again, you shouldn't be distracted from the discussion about whether or not you want to hit the target. Do you want the outcome? If the outcome you want is you don't want to pay too much for too little, you don't want to get ripped off, okay, and pretend that your little sentient experience is worth torture. Okay, it's that simple. So if you want to lower the price to something less than torture, the fact is you can't do it on this planet. So it's time to just give it up. It ain't going to work. You can't get a bargain on this planet. Evolution doesn't make bargains. All right, it makes tragedies. All right, so now you put the question pretty kind of plainly. Is the planet better off with humans here or humans not here? So the idea would be as if humans are here or nature just takes the planet. So you could argue that, yes, humans, while we're here, we're making we're shrinking, the viable space for living organisms and therefore making the planet smaller and it holds less life. So you could argue that the ocean has a lot less stuff in it because of human beings, living stuff. So I think that's a pretty solid argument that we eradicate enough of it that we diminish how much living stuff is in the ocean per second. Okay, there'd be more of it in the ocean if we weren't here. So there would obviously be more things living and dying. So yes, we kill a lot of stuff, but by killing it, we prevent it from reproducing, therefore prevent whole cycles of life. So therefore, we are doing it a benefit. So you could say the ocean is certainly better off with humans here to soil it. Okay. And I guess you could make the same argument that we don't have, herds of buffalo or, other organisms and all the whole biosphere that creates of a bunch of other organisms living off of that system. And so all those systems, we don't have flocks of birds that number in the trillions or whatever that probably did exist before humans started fucking around with the skies too. So you could argue there's less living animals. But again, this is all in the context of an assumption talking about this antinatalism for no purpose. Antinatalism to eradicate humans without any context that obviously we wouldn't leave the animals behind. If you'd have to be a cruel, insane lunatic to leave the animals behind, to leave them in hell. You're going to try to build the road out of hell and you're going to drive it and you're going to leave your dog behind. You're going to leave your cat in hell. that's a stupid argument. You're going to leave your cat in the burning house? This rescue mission that isn't going to rescue all of the pets? Deplorable. It would be all, what can I say to that? That's obviously a shitty attitude. So yeah, if the choice is humans or nature, you have to vote for humans. But that's only in the context of you're not going to save nature.
No.
Can you elaborate?
Cause a vast amount of suffering, most obviously in the domesticated animals who are reared for food.
Yeah.
We cause vast amounts of suffering and increasing amounts of suffering as the human population is growing. But we also cause vast amounts of suffering in among wild animals, because they suffer as a result of human encroachment on their habitats, as a result of the global warming that we are causing, as a result sometimes of hunting.
So again, he's bringing up other subjects that are, like I said, the global warming is a strike against humans being successful sterilizers. Because yes, warming the planet will make the planet have a higher carrying capacity. So in that context, again, you're saying, okay, well, are we right now successfully diminishing how many gurneys nature has their victims on? And yes, we've taken away some of Mengele nature's, you know, Mengele nature, you know, cruel nature. We've taken away some of its tortured gurneys. We've reduced some of the places where it can do its insidious work. But you know, that comes with a counter argument. Yeah, you know, it was just, like I said, the birds are probably a very good example, just in the idea that the number of birds, you know, there was a really, you know, we never, it's like seeing the stars and all that kind of stuff, right? If you didn't live 1,000 years ago, you wouldn't realize how many birds there really were. All right, well, anyway. And the fish, these are really good arguments about how, you know, obviously we have had done something to slow nature down, but obviously we can do other things that are going to speed nature up again.
There are all kinds of ways in which we inflict harm on other species, including wild animals.
Now, if it was the case that humans didn't exist, would there not be more animals in the world suffering? What do you make of that argument? More birth in the world overall because of all the space that would be available for wild animals to procreate?
There might be. It's hard to know. It's hard to know all the possible outcomes. And I think one of my objections...
That's sad that he would say that, because that's really not that hard to understand, that the planet is a You know, the carnage that goes on, and every second, the amount of organisms going through this death cycle, every millisecond, it's just unfathomable. And again, to think about it in terms of, the only good news is humans, animals over time had cooled the planet. So the planet's getting colder and colder and colder because the planet is sequestering a bunch of carbon. And we broke that cycle. So eventually the planet would have gotten pretty cold merely because of all the carbon we had subtracted from the active biosphere. It's sunk in the ground. Like I said, the more we keep doing that over time, the colder and colder the planet would have gotten. And so it might have reached it would have reached an ice age sooner, a substantially frozen age, not an ice age. A permafrost state sooner if humans hadn't interfered. So, you know, there's lots of argument. I mean, there's just a lot of arguments you can make about this particularly complex biosphere system. And again, it's sort of a distraction from the fundamental argument: should we engineer a graceful exit for ourselves and the animals? That should be the real question.
Is this playing God? And I don't mean playing God in the ordinary sense. It's that you think you've got a better overall assessment of what you can do, and you've got a greater, you've got an inflated view about your own agency and your own power.
Well, look, we're the only one in town. So, you know, so this idea that we should sit around and wait till we get smarter. No, come on. It's ridiculous. All right, we're smart enough. We know the score. Well, there's no God. There's no spirituality. There's no mumbo jumbo. The universe doesn't need us to cure its cancer. It's all this stuff. There's no, you know, we don't need to keep bullshitting around saying we can't figure out what it is to be a microbe with brains, a bug with brains on planet Earth. Yeah, we can figure out what that means, what it represents, and we can figure out what the right thing to do is. And the right thing to do is winnow it all down. Okay, we can know that much. Even if you leave some representatives of us, some tiny percentage of us here to monitor and do, you know, argue it to death with an AI or something, you know, wait for some information from space, you know, wait for somebody to tell you to come, help me, you know, we have to go on a rescue mission, you know, but, you know, you want to leave one firehouse behind, that's okay, but you don't leave this hell in place, you don't leave this burning forever, this eternal flaming.
And
yeah,
so you think that what you can do now is make these fine-grained calculations that you engage in horrific actions in order to produce less harm down the line. I mean, let's imagine somebody wants to engage in a genocide of a, let's say, a persecuted minority, and they say, well, this is actually a good action because we're going to kill off all these people, and that means that all their descendants will not be subject to the discrimination that they would otherwise be exposed to.
Right.
Now, that is just a truly bizarre argument, to think that engaging in mass murder is going to be justified because you've got this view that in the long run, there'll be fewer people who will be suffering as a result.
All right, well, let's just say that it was true that something, you know, like midgets or some dwarfs, something, you know, where there's clear liabilities, there's clear disadvantages, it's really not an ideal function, it's broken, okay? It's a broken DNA molecule. It's not, you know, it's pretty simply put that way, I think. It's fairly put that way. And you said, okay, I'm going to eradicate it. Why not? That's not genocide. It's just a rational statement. So if I had a genetic code where I had a 50-50 chance of getting some disease that made all my neurons explode and do some hideous thing, and it was terribly painful, but it didn't kill you. It just made you suffer for decades. I think it would be perfectly rational if other people said, you shouldn't breed. Okay, you shouldn't have kids. All right. And if I was so obstinate and I said, I'm going to keep doing it. All right. And I had a whole country full of us and we all did this horrible suffering and torment. And someday you decide to nuke us. I couldn't blame you. I mean, because it is stupid and cruel. It's stupid and cruel. All right. To pretend that there's every little stupid, disgusting, okay, you know, being born with two anuses or something, or some kind of silly crap, you know, that needs to be preserved, that somehow we have to build a statue to our deformities, is just nonsense. So again, you know, to pull the genocide card when, look, we all deserve genocide. We're all inadequate. We're insufficiently efficient. Period. We all have way too bloody a footprint. Fuck us all. But let's not pretend some of us aren't dirtier or smellier or, you know, that's just lying.
You really are attributing to yourself much too much responsibility. Much too much.
All right, so this is just bullshit, right? That you're taking on too much responsibility to recognize you have 100 billion. All right, so let's just say you have, what do you have, 910 million more neurons, okay, than 99% of the life on Earth. And with those extra neurons, you can't figure out that you should be driving the bus. That they shouldn't be and you should be. Okay, you're 990 times more intelligent than they are, and you're gonna say they should have their turn driving the bus. Oh, that's ridiculous.
Much authority to make these kinds of decisions, much too much confidence in your ability to make them correctly.
I mean, this is like, again, this is not any more complicated than making the decision for your dying pet. You know, should I ease the pain or shall I cause more? And then making a decision after your pet's died, I'm not going to get a puppy. You know, I'm not going to do it over again.
This is just optimism running rampant.
So whatever that is, like I said, this doesn't have anything to do with optimism. It just has to do with recognizing we're the smartest thing on this planet. There's a responsibility that innately goes with that role. If the smartest thing won't pick up the ball and run with it, what is supposed to happen? The dumbest thing is supposed to do it? Somebody has to pick up the ball and run. Nobody doesn't work. It's not going to happen. If the smart thing doesn't pick it up, something dumb will. So, bad, Benatar. Bad. Bad. All right, so the guy asked a really kind of bizarre question, because this couldn't come from a vegan antinatalist. So it's about fish farming again. So we're not talking about fish farming. We're just talking about the eradication of the fish population in the ocean. Now, obviously, what we're doing is preventing fish from living longer lives. So we're causing more cycles of life and death because we're shortening the life of all of the big predators in the ocean. So tuna fish and all that kind of stuff never really get to get really old anymore, you could argue. So in some sense, that's a negative because you're causing more deaths to actually take place. Even though there's fewer absolute living things, there's more cycles of life and death. So causing more death is a bad thing. So anyway, he says, like, okay, what if you had absolute knowledge and you had this equation and it said it's a net benefit to kill more fish? Well, yeah, if that's the conclusion, but the whole argument here is that we don't have much confidence in all of that, right? Because I can keep making all kinds of subtle arguments about exactly what the net effect is. Is the net effect actually less consciousness in pain? Less moments, less seconds of an organism in the struggle of death? And that's more of an open question. It's not that simple. So anyway, this whole conversation is about very mushy ground. And it really should just be about, is the goal graceful exit? And if it isn't, then it almost doesn't matter, right? Because there's nothing else but, you know, some variety of nature set loose. There's just nothing in between. There's nature set loose or not, and that's it. There's no way to really contain it, effectively contain it. There really isn't. All right. I hit the play button, I think.
Well, I can answer that question, but I don't want to rush into answering it because it's a massive hypothetical. We're just thinking practice. See, my worry is that you answer this question hypothetically, and then somebody comes along and says, in their great self-confidence, I've done those calculations and I've worked it out and I know. And that's the very worry that I have, is that people will attribute to themselves more wisdom, more understanding, more knowledge, more authority than they're entitled to attribute to themselves.
So that's the dangerous. That's the part I'm saying is dangerous, is to use these very hypothetical, very tinyly narrow, trying to turn those into yes or no questions, when the big question is, do you want to end the cycle? Do you want to stop this thing from happening? All right, and that's the real question. I mean, do you want the graceful exit, or are you going to let nature take its course? You've got to choose. Are you going to be a responsible human and do the right thing? Or are you going to sit back and let a stupid system decide?
So let's imagine we massively deplete the oceans of wild animals, but we don't complete the job. Well, there's every bit of evidence to think that there will then be a reburgeoning of ocean life. You'd have to pretty much hunt it to extinction in order to avoid anything.
Well, right. So that's, he's just coming back to the point. The point is, well, what's the answer? Do you sustain it at this level? Do you you know, how do you create the amount of attrition you're trying to create? And again, what do we do as a result, right? If we decrease the number of fish in the ocean or the amount we can pull out of the ocean, then we just start farming in puddles. You know, we just create fish farms. So these choices aren't really available choices. And the only real available choice is either you're voting for control or you're voting for chaos. Natural chaos. You know, humane, ethical, decent, empathetic control or chaos. Cruel, brutal, unrestrained, wasteful chaos.
If you eliminate some species entirely, you may just be opening up niches for other animals to boost in numbers. And these are things that human beings just cannot possibly calculate with any kind of confidence. If you've got the confidence, it's over.
It's just not true, because you can just calculate some of this, like red tide, different things where we've created a circumstance where it's a toxic environment, okay? And the fact is, living things will not thrive in it. Things with a brain will not thrive in it. So that's a fact. We can sterilize hunks of the planet. Now, is it the right thing to do? I don't think so, because it doesn't have anything to do with the end game. The end game isn't to, you know, reduce the amount of available territory for animals to exploit while we're here. The end game is what happens after we're not here. It's my end, you know. That's the only end game, the only conversation I'm interested in. All right, so now he poses the question, are the pro-natalist vegans trolling? Yeah, duh. Yeah, so we'll see what, you know. I mean, they're just making shit up to justify what they did in their life or what they want to do in their life, and they're just coming up with excuses to say, my lifestyle is okay. And that's all they're really doing. They had kids, they're just defending having kids.
That's just the reason they're arguing this.
Well, I can't speak to the motivations of every last person who advances an argument of this kind. I would be surprised if there are no people who have those motivations, but I can't say to every last person. What I can do is evaluate the argument itself. Mm-hmm. And you're right, I do think that arguments of that kind amount to sophistry.
Mm.
For the reasons that I've mentioned. If, for example, you are a vegan, and you now think that you ought to have more children because that's a good way to drive down the wild animal population, well, you could do it both ways. You could not have a child and thereby preventing the suffering of the child you would create, while at the same time beginning to eat meat and engage in other environmentally destructive things in order to reduce the wild animal population. So it's not obvious that if you really want to introduce these long and complex...
Right. Well, if you want to burn down this the civilization and cause more mayhem and more human destruction, don't have a kid, because you're going to waste a bunch of money educating it and doing all this slop and worrying about nonsense and clothes and all this kind of crap. And you could spend all the money on gasoline, you know, and then you can start your fires. You know, you could put the resources to the purpose of creating more social chaos, if that's your ambition. But stupid, I think. You give your money to Trump. You know, come on.
Causal processes to bring about fewer wild animals. That the way to do that is by having children. Yes, the number of people on the planet is a variable, but it's not the only variable. And it's also very unlikely that you're having a child, in other words, one solitary additional person, is going to have the kind of impact that argument assumes.
All right, well, that argument isn't made about their single child. The argument's made that all the vegans should have kids to help the cause of destroying the environment, and somehow by degrading the environment, let's say, and somehow by degrading the environment in the long run, that will mean that we will reduce animal suffering, which, again, you can't get to the end except on purpose, is my argument. you will never do a humane job accidentally. You have to do it on purpose. You can't kill it gracefully accidentally.
Are you going to have?
Yeah.
So it's a clever sounding argument, but I don't think it's a wise argument. That's a distinction I've drawn before between being clever and being wise.
Okay, so maybe we'll cut it there. I don't know. I think I would have been further along here. But yeah, there was a lot of complicated subjects, you know, where you can't really draw these clear, you know, for every human, there's point something more sentient life or point something less sentient life on Earth. I mean, it's just not that simple. And again, it doesn't have anything to do with what do we want the Earth to look like 10,000 years from now. And the argument I would be making is that we want it to look really, really quiet, where you can't find a bug on it. You know, you look at it and it just isn't doing anything. But anyway, it's probably enough of a video. And we'll maybe do it in three parts. We'll see how it goes. So, till the next time and such, and so forth and whatnot. Yeah, there's just no takeaway here. You know, it is just more complicated because we don't have enough absolute facts about what the best road to the end is. So I guess that's the argument. What's the best, most efficient road? I'm going to argue that enhancing civilization, that is reducing population, creating less chaos, creating a much smarter democracy, all of that kind of stuff is much more likely to produce a good outcome than putting more biological pressure on the planet, creating more undereducated humans, more reckless birth, more mouths to feed, more all that crap is going to be much more destructive to civilization and much more conducive to us never having a well-built parachute, never building a parachute, never making one. And we're just going to fly around in this rickety kite and crash and burn over and over again. Yeah, enough of a statement, I think. Till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot.